Hey, Josh.
Hey, Nate. How are you doing this week?
I am pretty under the weather this week. I've been sick. I'm going on day 17 now, so feeling pretty crappy. I've been doing lots of resting. And just yesterday afternoon, I finally started getting some energy back, so I'm excited to have some new excitement in life, and hopefully I can get back to doing the things that I like to do.
17. That's rough. Hope it's not anything serious, and I hope you're on the kind of coming out the other side, and this isn't haven't even reached the midpoint yet.
Yeah, no, I think it's getting towards the end. It's just been like a sinus cold and like basically can't sleep and that sort of thing. So that's been kind of crappy. But yeah, how have you been?
Well, we did miss a recording because I think I had sickness running through the household. So that kind of caused us to miss a week, and then I was catching up and whatnot. So here we are 2 weeks later. But yeah, that was probably 2 weeks ago. And then this week's been a little crazy. We've got, I don't know if I told you I was working on a bathroom renovation at a certain
point. No. Okay.
Yeah. And then I actually made up a lot of ground. We've done the layout. We did a bunch of other major pieces, like had some concrete taken up, did the like plumbing drains into the floor, like all this stuff. It's in the basement. So
yeah.
So it was a lot of like foundational work and framing, and did a lot of that over the holidays. And then I thought I was going to basically be able to chip away a little bit at it every weekend, but weekends have been busy. And then I have a re-injury of my elbow, and I didn't want to make that worse. So essentially we have a contractor friend finishing it up. So I had to get rid of my man pride of like doing it all myself and just have someone else finish it. But it's great. So they started this week, and they've torn through, and now their drywall's coming in next week. So it's like it sped up the timeline, honestly. It was going to take me forever on my own.
It's great when you can get a professional in to help you with that stuff. Like I'm doing a basement reno, so I know exactly what it's like. I chip away at it too, and it just takes forever. And when you get to a certain point, you're just like, this isn't worth it. I need to just pay somebody to help me.
And there's parts you like, and there's parts you don't like. In the past, I always hire someone to do drywall because I'm not good at it, and I don't have the time, patience, and frustration. Yep. But other things, like I like plumbing, I like electrical, I like the layout, I like designing, I like building to a certain point, but when it gets laborious, so
yeah, I'm the same way as you. I love it too, but like chipping concrete, that's enough to break anybody.
Yeah
Cool. Well, I think we should probably talk about some software today. I think that's why people listen to us.
Yeah, I don't think they do. Or they just don't listen to us. It's fine.
People listen to us. I keep getting reminded of this.
I know. Hey, guys.
Hi.
Or girls and everyone.
Well, I have some questions for you. So I've been doing customer research very slowly for this customer service idea. And I was last time I was talking about it, it was kind of hard to get people to talk to. And I updated some of my messaging when I would reach out to people, like with like a cold outreach or even a warm intro from like someone else. And that has really helped. I've gotten a lot more people, just a lot stronger signal. Someone says nope, they're like definite nope. And if people say yes, they're like definite, like they fit in the right bucket kind of thing. So that's just wanted to report back on that has really helped. I still haven't gone to an in-person meetup yet, but that's on the list of things to do. But I did want to ask you about, because I've been trying to validate ideas. And so I've got a lot of good feedback from people on, this is what's annoying. This is what I don't like. This will be the perfect software for me. Here's approximately what we pay for this kind of software right now. Here's where I think is a reasonable amount for people to pay for X, whatever. And I guess I'm kind of getting to the next part of this is like, well, that's nice that you have all these ideas, but will you actually buy this thing? Or, who makes the purchase decision? Or how long is the sales cycle on this kind of thing? Or that sort of thing. And I'm just curious if you have any kind of thoughts or ideas around validating that, or kinds of questions maybe to ask related to that. Because I'm kind of starting from nothing. So I'm trying to figure that out.
First things that come to mind are, trying to ask people what they would do in the future. Is always like you can't bet on it. So things like how long, obviously you can ask things like what is your typical sales cycle, but that's fine. So you can ask those. You can ask questions that are in the past, like how does this work for you? But for me, I think the more important things for you is more on like, yes, you're using an existing stuff. Like, let's not even talk about price, because you don't want that to cloud. Their calculus, right? Which you essentially want to be like is like, if I was able to, you use this software and it does steps 1 through 7, it's a pain, and you just wish it was like ABC. You just wish it was these 3 steps. Is that enough to make you switch? right? Like, is that enough?
Yeah.
Or it was like, is that a big enough draw? Like, they're like, you know, you want that Fry moment of them handing you the money, saying, you know, take my money, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not about how much. It's like finding for you, like finding that, what is that thing I'm building that is going to make you be like, hell yes, I am switching from that. I almost don't even want to know how much it costs, right? Like, it's, you don't want to ask them the price, but you want them to be like, yes. And then for them to go, well, is it going to be more expensive? Like, it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. You don't want to get them out of like, well, I might switch if it's cheaper. And it's like, no, that's a bad signal for them to be asking, well, is it going to be cheaper? You don't want them to move because it's cheaper, because they're already paying for the thing. You want them to move because their lives are going to be 10x better. Because of that. But when I train people, it's going to be so much easier. Like, every time I onboard a new person onto this, I've got to get on the phone with them. I've got to like walk them through Zoom of how our stuff works, because they didn't have this feature. So I needed to use this weird other feature, this tag thing. So you've got to do this search and click here to do this. Mm-hmm, it's like, well, what if it just did how your brain works, how your workflow works, and just did it in two steps? Like,
Yeah, so I think I've kind of narrowed down some of those time saver kind of things where you can put like, this person's time is worth approximately this, and it will save them about this much time per week or per month or whatever. I can kind of narrow down some of those things, which help me to get to the, like, this actually means something to this person. But I think what I'm hearing, like, and for the price question, I've kind of tried to say, what do you currently pay for the software that you use to solve this problem? So like, what do you pay for your current ticketing software? What do you pay for your current thing? And that's at least gives you like a rough idea of like, well, they've paid this in the past. So like
budget, like what's palatable for that?
Sure. Yeah. Not to like, cause I don't think I'm, you know, I don't think I can actually narrow down like how much they would pay. I think I'm just trying to get a rough idea, right?
But I think if you have a captive audience, like I don't know if that's the best use of a question for them, because you're not trying to turn this into a sale, right? So like, marketing information, what people pay for products, is clearly out there. So it's not, you don't need that person's, like, again, and not, one, I think it might be a turn off. It starts to feel like a sale if you're asking questions like that.
Yeah.
And want to come back to them with more of like, oh, actually, hey, can I come back to you? Because it's almost like, you're trying to come back and close me as a sale now, because I didn't think that this was about. But when you start asking questions that are related to budget, and like what you pay, like, signal goes off. Even if after that call, they're like, yeah, next time he follows back up, I'm probably getting the sale and I'm not going to want to do it. So I wouldn't waste that question there.
Okay.
Because it's also market information. Like, it's pretty clear what people pay. You can look at all the websites. It's pretty clear what the products pay in general. And you could probably, you know, ask ChatGPT. You could probably add, there's probably many more sources of that same information than that individual.
Mm-hmm. So maybe would it be a better question to maybe ask them, like, what size is their team? Because that, like, a lot of these softwares are like kind of size based, right? Like, if you have a small team, then it's like a smaller price.
Backing up, what are you trying to get? What do you want to know?
So I want to know that if I solve this problem, that there's, you know, cheese down that tunnel. Like, is it going to cost? Are they going to be paying like $20 a month for this software, or are they going to be paying like $500 a month for this software? Because that makes a big difference on how much time I can allocate to this.
So yeah, I think look for questions that potentially answer multiple things for it, right? So like, I think the team question is good. It's like, oh, how many other people are involved with this? Like, are there other workflows involved with other people? So that's a way you could ask and understand size of team. But also, like, I think in general, it's like, okay, anyone that has a team like is probably willing to pay. Like, think of, it's like kind of like when they talk about who is like TikTok competing with. They're competing with YouTube, they're competing with Netflix, they're competing with anyone of your entertainment time. Mm-hmm. But like, I think there's going to be, I don't think you have to worry about it being a $15 a month product, because you've picked the customer service business software space.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you're not picking the space that is the solopreneur software, help desk, add a browser attachment so I can use Gmail as a CRM, then you're not going to be in the $15 space. So I think you're trying to look for confidence, but there's confidence somewhere else.
Okay.
And even just having this talk should be like,
yeah,
you shouldn't worry about that, getting the information from them. Everything you have this captive audience of this person for is understanding their pain points and their problems and really understanding the level of intensity of that, right? So they're not going to know how much they're going to pay. They might not even know. So it's not worth, it's like the market is going to dictate that for them. Otherwise, you should be asking like frequency of use, right? Like think about the things that are going to just make, if someone's spending time with the app, getting more people, how much business time is invested, their teammates, how much, well, how, you know, okay, do that. But how often do they do that? Is it once a month? Is it once a week? Like,
yeah.
You know,
so what, I think
that type of
thing. I think a bit what I'm worried about is that talking to these support managers, they have real problems and they're able to articulate them. But what I worry about is that that upper management maybe just gives them hardly any budget to actually do their job. And you see this where like often the support team wishes they would have more agents or they wish that they would have better resources for this or that or whatever. And they often don't. And so that's kind of like leads into the next part of also like figuring out who the decision maker is kind of behind some of these things, because like this support manager might be my champion because they have the problem and they're willing to stick their neck out and say that. But to be able to make this palatable for like whoever is paying the bill for this or deciding, you know, whether or not to purchase this software, I feel like I have to explore a little bit in that direction. And I'm a little bit not sure how to go about that.
Okay. Well, then you can ask about the teams. I think that's good. So like who else looks at this software? So you can ask like how are in general, like are, you know, what's the last tool you can ask it in other roundabout ways. Like what's the last tool, new tool you guys got and where did it come from? Does it come from like, did your boss just give it to you or is that something you guys are in charge of exploring? And so so you can deflect a little by not asking about this current software. Like, and again, you don't want to set off the alarm bells of I'm trying to replace it. Just like you can ask about how the buying goes, but also are there reports that are run? Where do reports go, right? Like, because if you're thinking about that, so that's one, but also from your targeting, you should be targeting also the decision makers, right? Like, yes, these other people have the pain points, but someone else, if there is decision making on this type of software, right? Like these are also just general, like how you buy software, how you buy support software questions, but
yeah. So kind of what I've figured out so far is that like, that the support manager is kind of in charge of making sure that the team has the tools and also doing the reporting on how the team is doing and often presenting that to upper management. Sometimes upper management has view into the reporting side of things, but other times it's more of like a quarterly report or whatever that the support manager gives, or a weekly report the support manager gives. And then it sounds like there's kind of some companies have like an IT checkoff kind of thing. You know, IT has to verify that this is a good vendor. And then there's often where like the support manager doesn't feel like they can make the decision on their own as to like, let's replace the ticketing software or something like that. They feel like they need to have approval from their boss, basically, who is often like a C-level, like someone pretty high up there, who I don't think would care to know about support software necessarily, other than this one costs this much, this one costs that much, I get this much savings in time or whatever, that kind of thing.
I don't know. I don't know if you're just trying to ask too much from this. Once you get an interview, you're trying to get all this information and trying to de-risk everything, right? Like,
well, I'm not trying to get it all in one shot. Like I feel like with each of the interviews, I'm trying to kind of prod, like I always ask the problem questions, but then just kind of like, if they're really talkative, I'll poke around some of these other areas as well. Cause yeah, ultimately I'm just trying to de-risk, right?
Yeah, I guess, but that's what I was saying, like that some of the risk is in other areas. Like I would think supports, like I'm not concerned about support software being a like risk. It's more of like the bigger risk is, can you find the right sort of wedge, right? The right feature set that is going to punch through for that, make this is the ideal software for them. Is there a big enough gap in what they need to be like, yes, give me that money, give you the money, that it doesn't matter? Like, oh my gosh, this would solve. Because if the bigger, the stronger you make that pull, like they're going to be banging down the doors of their boss to be like, this is the software that will save so much time and pain. Like we might be able to get rid of 3 reps because of this. Like, I don't know, like budget, or it always feels stressed. Like, I wouldn't worry about the other stuff. It's like, if you have this one, you find the one lightning rod of this other thing, it makes all the rest of the problems become a pull versus a push, right? Like it creates enough. So it's almost like, is this strong enough? You don't want to come in with like a, oh yeah, this is a, a 3 out of 10, then you have to do all these other things to kind of like dress it up to make it feel like that. You want a 12 out of 10. And they're like, I don't even care if it has a report. I don't like all the stuff that otherwise would be on the list of buying things. Like if it's so good, they're not going to care. Right. So that's like, you want that. So that's what I would keep focusing on, that part. And I like your feedback loop of the messaging, because then now as you're reaching out to other people, you're speaking more, you're working on your marketing copy, working on like what is going to punch through, right? Like, hey, I see you're, and I don't know what niche you're focusing on or what use case you're focusing on yet. We don't have to talk about it, but like, it seems like now it becomes like, it, for me, it's a feedback loop of like trying to find that lightning rod. And then you go back and you go and you, you're keep filtering that in. If you start getting more hits of people that are like, yes, that's a problem, or yes, Ed can do these things, I'd like to talk to you more about that. You know, that getting those yeses or hell nos are fine, but like getting the more of the yeses, and it's like, okay, now I'm starting to craft at least how I'm describing the lightning rod, because no one's going to see it until they actually do it. And then the rest of it is, can I build it to fulfill the promise of the thing so that they're just as excited, if not more excited, than they're actually using it? Because sometimes what seemed interesting, and then they use it and they're like, yeah, I thought that was interesting. It's really not that big a deal. And it's like, that's a different story, but that's like the validating of the actual thing itself.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think I actually need, I need to test some of that where I present some of the ideas, because so far what I've been doing is just trying to get them to tell me problems. So that way I can verify that they're not just, you know, carrying on with whatever I suggest, which has been helpful. But I've definitely seen a few things where like, I'll say something, like I'll ask in a certain direction and suddenly like the lights will come on and it's like, oh yeah, 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 like this. So that's really cool to see.
It's like, I haven't done any of this. So remember, like, this is all Josh anecdotal, what Josh thinks Nate should do, right? But like, I see it as like, you've had these people you've talked to, you're just trying to get the problems out, which is one phase. And ideally, if you don't, if you keep them in that, I'm just researching, I'm not trying to sell you phase by not turning them off. Hopefully, once you've distilled, you know, you talk to 10, 20 people, now I'm pretty confident I'm hearing the same thing. Now I go back to those people and say, hey, I've talked to more people. Here's some of the results. Like, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Like, quick, yes, no. This, is this on target with this type of thing? Again, haven't built the product, not trying to sell you, but just let me know if this is like resonates, right? And then you can circle back to those people and get that stronger sense. And then at that point, like, you get enough of those. And then if not, those fall flat, then it's like, okay, I'm finding more and more and more. Maybe they don't come back, but maybe you can recycle back to them. And but you're building this sort of group of people that are willing to at least, and then at that point, then it's like, okay, now I think I might be ready to at least wireframe it. And then it's like, then who's going to come back and say, right. So like, keep, you keep doing this, that cycle, until you have this level of confidence and you have these people that are like, basically they start pulling and they start going like, okay, when's it going to be done?
Well, and that's what's been, but that's what's been cool even already now, is just even talking to people at the end of the calls, they often ask to be kept up to date as to like what's being, what's being done about it. Because, and so like, that's encouraging to me, because it's like, oh, you actually do care about this. It's not just like, sure, as a favor to you, whatever kind of thing. Yeah. It's a lot of fun. I really enjoy listening to people's problems and this kind of thing.
And do follow up. So even if, make sure you're keeping those warm. So like, I don't know if you're keeping a spreadsheet or a log of the things, but also even if you don't have something, just like if ones you had talked to a month ago, keep them, even just even a no update is okay, right? Like keep them like, hey, yeah, I remember, you know, this, I'm still talking to other people. I'm starting to form some things. I'm not ready to kind of send it back to you yet, but I appreciate you, you know, helping me and staying tuned in or whatever. Like, cause you don't want to send them an email in 6 months and they're like, who's this? Right. So like, also maybe it's just a funny thing, but like, as you can tell, I have a, if someone asks me for my advice, I dump a whole bunch of crap on their head. Maybe there's gold in there, you know, but one thing that bothers me is when I'm that person and I do these things and then I follow back up, right? Like after a call, let's say you interviewed me and I'm like, oh yeah. And I was thinking about the software idea. Or I knew about like this, the software that was similar to you, but once I come, I'll send it to you. And maybe I think about it 2 days later and I send it to you, right? The number of times that I follow back up as a person that was being interviewed and I don't get any response back is shocking. Like, it's almost
interesting.
Like, it's a punch in the gut because you're like, I gave that person all this time. And it's like, I got zero acknowledgement. I got zero, like, I don't know if it's just people doing it as a job, but there's times, I mean, there are, I'm not calling out anyone's names, but there are plenty of startup founders and indie hackers and whatever that I've helped out and given them an hour of time or talking and whatever, not you. There are a lot of other good people out there, but, and it's sort of like a, it's kind of a punch in the gut when you, cause sometimes it's like, oh yeah, oh, I've heard this person talking on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to just like, I'd love to help them. And I'd love to just get a contact, get a build a rapport, let them know I'm a real human on this other side. And the number of times that like this like person I've followed for a while and I help them and I talk to them and then I send them a follow-up or I don't get any follow-up from them like, oh, thank you. Or even if I do, I write reply. Oh, actually, I had a quick question for you, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And the number of times I get ghosted for stuff like that, I don't take offense anymore. I just move on. Yeah. I'm like, okay, that's that person that clearly does not see me, does not respect my time and is sort of like, meh, you're on this list now of like, you know, whatever type of thing. So anyway, maybe it's just a pet peeve of mine, but that is super bothersome when you invest the time. And I know you're not like that. You're a very, you know, reply follow-up person like I am, but, and I know it's not them either. Like it's not intentional, but it's still bothersome.
Yeah. Well, that's good. It's helpful to hear that from that side. Sometimes I feel like you're, you know, when I'm on the receiving end of advice and things like that, sometimes you feel bad to follow up with the person because you're like, you know, I won't bother them. You know, they already gave me so much time. I don't want to, you know, mess with it. But that's helpful to hear that.
I think as long as you stay respectful and keep it within the lane of like I said, I think, and I know it wasn't intentional, but you don't want to set any trigger alarm that it is like, was bait for being a sales call, right? Because that's the immediate, that just feels even worse, right?
Cool. Anything else you want to chat about today?
It did make me think of, so when we're talking about the lightning rod type of thing, and I know there's a lot of better names for it. They used to call it like the killer app or the killer feature of stuff. Funny enough is like, I was listening to a podcast the other day and it was on My First Million. It was about a kid in high school that is, you know, again, great for the headlines. Their app makes $20 million a year. It's like a mobile app. And he's like in high school. It's a great interview. It's interesting. But he talked about one thing and kind of similar. He was like, I try to find, he didn't use the word killer app, but he was like, you know, the killer feature types of things. And that gets them hooked or gets them in. It's sort of like the hook of a social media post or a TikTok, you know, whatever you're doing to like grab their attention. And it's like, you need that attention getting, you know, feature type of thing. And his app, essentially what it does is you take a picture of food and it uses AI and all these other things. And it started out as just a wrapper, but they've done a lot since, but essentially it tells you the protein content, the calorie content for all the people that were manually tracking their food intake. So they built an app for that. And that was like the killer feature, which is sort of like, again, I told it to you. You're like, well, that's interesting. And if you were the type of person that logged their food manually, you'd be like, I'd try that. Like, it easy to explain, solves a pain point, not even asking about the money. Like, could other people explain it to other people very quickly? Like all those, you know, check boxes that are nice. And so that was his, but it made me think about that in your scope. You know, came through and used this weird lightning rod analogy that no one's ever heard of and will probably die on this podcast, but you know, so.
Yeah. The lightning rod thing is interesting because it's like to find something generic, right? That get people really excited about. Because I have noticed too, my tendency, because I work in consulting, so it's like I do a lot of custom software for people. And so people often have their custom, you know, thing that they get excited about.
Yes.
And that's, you know, one-offs, but to try and find something generic.
Right. It's very different because you are catering to their every little nuanced need, whether they'll use it or not, whether they're, because even if they think they'll use it, they're going to ask you to build it, right? Like it does not necessarily lie, but even if they saw that on a list on a software that they might not even be able to comprehend that that's actually doing the thing that they want to do in terms of a, you know, much more to them is like, boiling the ocean I want. I'm doing custom and I'm going to get everything exactly how I want it. right?
So. Yeah, yeah. What do you think about like blended stuff, where it's like there's the standard software, and then you can have like, you know, your custom integration or your custom link to it, basically. Because there has been a bit of a pattern related to that I've noticed with these customer service people, where they often have, you know, in-house systems for like ERP or order tracking or something like that, and like integrating with those. Like, there doesn't seem to be a generic one so far, but what's your thoughts on that?
I'm not sure what you
like,
what you're asking.
The thought, like the idea of doing some sort of customization per customer for a SaaS type of software that I'm looking
at. So more bespoke per, it's sort of like I have a kind of platform, but I'm doing like kind of consulting to sort of help like craft a layer on top that is a little more custom to them.
To kind of go the last like half mile to get to them, where it's like, here is like the bulk of what you're going to use, but you need this, like, you know, this little connector will make your life a bunch better. Do you think that's a red flag, or that's like a, like,
I mean, we have to do that. Like Referral Rock does, like we have to do, but ours is like, yes, is, I wouldn't say it's the last half mile, you know, or but it's the last little bit. So it doesn't happen for everyone. But it's like, for example, you know, we have to track conversion tracking, right? Like pixel tracking. And does someone fill out a form? Does someone hit this event? And, you know, oftentimes it just involves like custom JavaScript because they have a custom form. So it's like, okay, on submit, like grab what's in the email, grab what's in the thing, make sure we're, so that stuff we have to do. But, you know, we also try to circumvent that at all and say, actually use our landing page, right? It does all the tracking for you. So if you don't even want to do that and you're okay with not using your specific checkout page and doing like a referral, just puts their email and they get the coupon over email, and now we've registered the referral and done the attribution because that's what counts. I think there's, if you know that early on, it's probably, I don't know, it could be two things. It could be a red flag, like, oh my gosh, there's going to be a lot of one-offs and crap in here, right? But obviously you start to build patterns and figure that out. On the flip side, if it is, and there's a big market, that could also be turned into a moat, right? Like, because that, so like, I wouldn't say it's a red flag. It's just a signal that you have to be aware of, that you have to think about how you want to attack that from a strategic positioning perspective, right? Because then you might be like, we're the only ones that actually will like do that for you and make that work, right? Like you've used all these other ones before, and then you need to bring get your team involved. You need to get your dev team to like code this widget and do this thing. Nope, we do that for you. Like, it does remind me, and this was one of the other things I wanted to talk about real quick on the podcast, but in that episode there about the kid that did the photo food app, one of the hosts brought up a quote, which I loved and looked up because it is very apt to what we just talked about, finding problems, and also specifically this kind of, is this a red flag if you have to do custom stuff, right? So the quote they said came from Evan Williams, the founder of Twitter and Blogger and a bunch of software, and kind of paraphrasing it, but essentially it was, let's see, where is it? They said, okay, take a human desire, preferably one that's been around for a long time, identify that desire and use modern technology to take out steps, right? Because if we talked about these other things, I kind of already was talking about, you know, if they have to do these seven steps, but you can reduce them to three, right? Like, that's a good thing. And same thing, if I had to do these steps of getting a custom dev involved, and like, now I have to project manage this thing for 3 months before I can even get to using your software, right? You just removed a massive meaningful step in the process, right? And if you think about that all, and again, the kid doing the photo, think of all the steps you removed, the people that would otherwise take them, you know, they have to remember to log, understand it, who knows if it's accurate. Now it's all I literally have to do is take out a camera, take a picture, and remove like what otherwise would have been 5 minutes out of every day to like log my chicken sandwich, or would it force me to be like, oh, actually, yeah, this is too painful. I'm just going to eat the same chicken sandwich every day.
Yeah, right.
To make that pain go away, right? Yeah, then it's like, oh, now I'm bored of that chicken sandwich. But but it's a good quote. And when I tried to look it up just before the episode, it was like before we started recording.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a, I'll send you the link But I was trying to find the exact quote, but it sort of gets paraphrased a lot. So I think a lot of it is sourced in a couple talks he's given, but I have a link to a James Clear blog post where he talks about it. But there's a good section because they transcribe like a YouTube video that he did. And well, we could share it in the show notes, but that I really like that because it's like he's talking about this stuff like, you know, 10 mm-hmm. years ago, but at the same time, you know, they're talking, he's talking about the internet age of the ability, the cognitive load, all the steps you can remove with the internet. But even since then, you had mobile, which again, different steps, like phone in your pocket, camera mm-hmm. in your pocket. Again, yep. wasn't able to do with this app the kid did. And now, and software on the cloud, like all these little mini steps that have just technology advancements that have now made like infrastructure level, like Stripe coming along. How much harder was it for that? That's what led to a SaaS boom, right? Stuff like that.
Well, it's, I think what's nice about it too, is that it's kind of generalizable. It's advice you could use in any business, right? Like even if you're like a physical products business, you could find ways to remove steps and, you know, improve things for people.
Right. Right. Like coaches, yeah. like even like, you know, I think of my, you know, coaches, it, you remove the steps of having to read all these books, have the confidence, have the context to help yourself, like all these things. It's the accountability. You don't have to be accountable. Mm-hmm. Now you're just accountable to a person versus like having to remember and self-discipline. Like those are all yep. steps and friction, right? If you're right. Yeah. If you think about it across any sort of business type of thing, it's like find the pattern, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And even the framework we talked about of the ideal bootstrap business, it kind of locks into that as mm-hmm. well. Like we're like find existing markets, like it's sort of yep. in a similar way, but in a SaaS bootstrap way.
Yeah, yeah. Good stuff. Well, this has given me lots to think about.
All right, cool. Well, hope you're feeling better. And
I hope so else. Too. Yeah. I hope your rental gets done soon.
Yep, cool.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Josh.
Talk to you later. Bye.
Hey, thanks for joining us today. If you want to chat with us, we're on Twitter. I'm at Nate Bosher and Josh is at JLogic. If you're a new listener, check out some of our most popular episodes. Episode 52, 7 years to 22 MRR and zombie startups. Or episode 30, review sites are a necessary evil and hacks to get around them. Thanks again.